This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, January 25th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Remote work is hard. There is a reason phrases like Zoom fatigue have become so common. But new services are looking for ways to make working remotely easier by mimicking real office spaces, kind of like a video game. There are places where you could catch up with your team in an online conference room or bump into your colleague at the virtual water cooler. Our tech columnist Christopher Mims visited one of these spaces. He'll tell us all about that experience and why it could become the norm for the rest of us after these headlines. A Wall Street Journal analysis has found that Facebook and Amazon topped all other U.S. companies in federal lobbying expenditures in 2020. It's the second straight year that that's been the case. Facebook spent nearly $20 million, up nearly 18% from the year before. Amazon spent about $18 million, up 11%. A spokesman for Facebook said the company had been clear that the internet needs updated regulations and that it would continue voicing support for new rules to address that need. An Amazon spokeswoman said its team was working to advocate on issues important to policymakers, employees, and customers. The news comes as big tech companies are bracing for fresh scrutiny of their businesses under a new administration in the new year. Speaking of sparring between big tech and governments, Google is threatening to shut down its search engine in Australia. It's part of an ongoing back and forth between the two over a proposed law. It would require tech companies to pay publishers for news that appears in search results. Australia's prime minister fired back at Google, saying the country makes its own rules and doesn't respond to threats. More Google news, the search giant's parent company is winding down Loon. That's its project meant to provide internet access using high-flying balloons. Loon was originally started to connect billions of people in communities where it was too expensive or too difficult to install traditional ground-based infrastructure. But in the end, it wasn't able to bring costs down enough to make the business model sustainable. And we've talked before on the show about how there's been an influx of day traders in the past year or so, in part because platforms like Robinhood have made it a lot easier to get into investing. Many of those new traders have been turning to social media for ideas about where to invest. That's had a big impact on certain companies' stock prices. The latest to get a boost? The struggling video game retailer GameStop. On Friday, shares of the company jumped 51% after members of the Reddit forum Wall Street Bets encouraged people to buy. We'll be watching shares of GameStop today to see whether it'll be able to hold on to that high. All right, on the topic of video games, coming up, some companies are trying out a video game-like approach to telework. But does it have a place in the future of office life? That's after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with. Listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
It's another Monday in the world of remote work. Depending on when you're listening to this, you might be gearing up for another day of sitting in front of your computer in your Zoom sweater, trying to get stuff done via video conference. We're, of course, familiar with the challenges of remote work already. Big group calls can be awkward and inefficient, and it's hard to replace the serendipity of running into someone in the break room. But lately, some new services have been trying to solve for those issues with virtual office spaces. Our tech columnist Christopher Mims visited one himself, and he joins me now to talk about what he saw. Hey, Christopher, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you visited the virtual offices of IDE Corp. They were using a space through a service called Gather. Can you talk about what that experience was like?
I have visited a number of corporate offices in my time. So it was strange to visit a virtual office that reminded me of real world ones, which are, kind of whimsical, like Airbnb. They have all their conference rooms, which are modeled after various apartments on Airbnb. So being in a virtual office where there were, desks and conference rooms and, a stage for people to give talks and a cafeteria and a bar, and the office is actually in a castle and there's a beach. It was really funny how, even though I'm walking around it with my avatar, I felt in some sense like I was there. And maybe that's, decades of playing video games. But I also think that there is a lot to be said for the way that video games, their design over decades has been refined to really tap into innate abilities that we have. So, for example, in our brains, we have place cells, which are physical analogs. It's an individual neuron that lights up when you go to a place. And you can see this in the brain of a rat when it's traveling through a maze, for example. Or if you talk to people who win the annual World Memory Championship, a lot of them use what are called memory palaces. So you imagine a house and you walk through it and you place the objects you want to memorize in the house. That works so well because we have this huge section of our brain which is devoted to place and geography and navigating in three-dimensional space. We just don't use it with our existing interfaces for communicating remotely. So when I went into a virtual 2D office and started walking around, the thing that really struck me was like, oh my God, I'm using more of my brain and it feels more natural. So when I'm in a virtual HQ hosted on, for example, Gather, it's very easy. I just use my arrow keys and I'm moving in two dimensions, just like, you know, Link in The Legend of Zelda. And at the same time, they have incorporated sort of the minimum requirements for communicating in that space as we would in a real one. And one of those is spatial audio. So if my avatar is next to somebody else's avatar, we can talk freely in these little bubbles, just like we would on Zoom through video chat. You know, if we walk away from each other, the sound fades and then dies completely. So you can create these clusters of conversation, or you can walk up to somebody in the hallway and have a chat with them that's private, or you go into a room and only the people in the room can hear each other. So this allows, you know, based on my interviews with the people who are working in this, these types of spaces, this kind of more spontaneous collaboration like we're used to in an office. At the same time, because you can make yourself more or less available, you can turn off your camera, you can say I'm away, you're not tethered to your desk as you would be in a physical space. Going to this office, it really struck me how quickly I was able to, you know, interview a lot of people just by walking up to them. And that just doesn't work with the friction of, you know, a Zoom call where it's like, oh, where's the link? Okay, here, log in. I'm waiting for you to log in. Is everybody here? Oh, you're muted. Just all of that extra friction really gets in the way of spontaneous communication, I think.
And Gather is one of a number of companies offering similar services. Just how widespread are these types of platforms, and how are companies using them?
There are a lot of companies using them. I mean, one of the biggest ones, which is called Remo.co. They're used a lot for events. They told me that they have, you know, multiple hundreds of thousands of monthly active users. Spatial Chat claims similar figures. You know, they have people using them from, you know, every big tech company you could imagine, and, you know, plus Boeing and a bunch of other Fortune 500 companies, not all of which are paying members, because of course they all have a freemium tier. So it is nascent, you know, hundreds of thousands of monthly active users. But if you're having a few big events, you know, that could only be a few dozens or hundreds of individual companies. But it has impressed me that the biggest ones by just traffic are bootstrapped. And they're like, look, we're already making revenue. We don't need investment because we're able to pay our server bills from people signing up. That is, of course, a very powerful signal that something is sticky and it's working. If you can get to revenue, if you can go from nothing to a product that is making money in 9 months, like, that's a very compelling space generally.
So it sounds like a lot of users. And how are all these companies using these types of platforms? It sounds like it might just be more about special events than it is about, you know, putting in your full 9-to-5 from the virtual office.
I think that right now, the initial use case for most companies and organizations is events, because partly that allows them to just dip their toe. It's low commitment. I mean, if you're going to have a holiday party in one of these, people don't have to adapt their work style to it. It's just spend a couple of hours walking around some virtual space. So companies using it to work in, I think, are in the minority. I've also heard interesting use cases like people holding scientific meetings and, you know, they build out this big hall. And then everybody's standing in front of their scientific poster. And, you know, anybody who's ever been to a science meeting or a medical meeting knows that that is this sort of central ritual for disseminating new data and information, and also just like meeting people in your field. And, you know, it's the science fair for adults, but it's really important in academia. So it's been interesting that so many universities and other institutions seem to be using it for those kind of events. Others, you know, are using it for parties. Some are using it just to replace, you know, what people, the old, you know, the stuff that we all used to go to in convention centers where you'd go to a talk, but the real substance of it is having coffee or a drink with somebody after the talk is over.
Chris, if I can put on my cynical hat for a second, during the pandemic, I feel like a lot of workers are struggling with Zoom fatigue and with the sort of always on mentality that comes with being fully remote. These services seem to require more presence out of employees, and that seems like a potential challenge.
I think as with Zoom, as with Slack, you know, where we were promised this is the future of remote work. And then once you're kind of forced to use like really high doses of these things, you really run into their limitations and you get Zoom fatigue or Slack ennui or whatever we want to call it. I think that the same could be true for these. On the other hand, I think that there is the potential for them to be the next evolution that makes it a little bit more sustainable. I mean, remote work experts I talked to cautioned against companies saying, oh, this tool is going to solve our problem for us. At base, I think the real challenge with remote work is companies need to establish a bunch of new norms, in some ways very different from what we are used to in an in-person office, where norms can be established by osmosis. Like, they have to be more deliberate. And, you know, whether or not you're using a virtual HQ, you know, being forced to, you know, everyone share what they're working on, you know, in some kind of document that can be accessed asynchronously, all those little nuances of how, what it takes to make a really functional remote workforce work, that doesn't go away. The tool doesn't solve for that automatically, but maybe it makes it, you know, a little bit easier.
So it sounds like you think this is something that might be here to stay as we move into at least a more heavily remote workforce in the future.
Absolutely. And I also think that ultimately we're building toward kind of a more complete fusion of the internet and real life through, you know, mediums like augmented reality. In some ways, I think we're laying the tracks now for that. So the more we get used to collaborating remotely through all these tools, the more natural it will seem to toggle between what we're doing in the real world and what we're doing on the internet via other things like our glasses, our VR headsets, our ever more mobile devices, our wrist-based whatever.
All right, that's our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.